Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that's fair and balanced. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey, Corey.
And I'm also joined by former Labour parliamentary candidate and Remain campaigner Fred Grindrod. Hello, Fred.
Hi, Corey. Hi, Steve.
What we are going to talk about is Andrew Adonis and his particular views. We're going to talk about, is Andrew Adonis the centrist Nigel Farage who's been driven mad by Brexit? Or is he a soothsayer, a truth teller who's telling it like it is? Or is that framing, in fact, the problems and the fact that the media, in trying to be balanced, is skewing coverage, particularly on Brexit? We're going to talk about that after this. And Andrew Adonis's point, which he's been making on Twitter repeatedly to the point where I've had to unfollow him because it's being so nauseating, is that the BBC is now the Brexit Broadcasting Corporation and the media itself generally is quite biased in favour of Brexit. How accurate a reflection of the British media is that, do you think?
So I think you need to split that actually into two. You've got your print media, which absolutely are biased and in favour of Brexit. You just need to look at the Daily Mail, look at the Telegraph, to a degree the Times as well, though not to the same extent as the others. They all seem to be much more in line with that Brexiteer, quite often the more free trade kind of angle, mindset, other than the Daily Telegraph, which is and the Express, which are much more protectionist and nationalistic in their approach. Where things get a bit more clouded, actually, is when it comes to television broadcasting, especially in regards to the BBC. Because whilst the BBC, you can point to lots of instances where the BBC has maybe not necessarily done its due diligence in terms of reporting on Brexit in the way that, you know, Remainers might want. But at the same time, the BBC is also getting a lot of complaints from the Brexiteers for the exact same thing, where they're complaining that they're not necessarily reporting on some of the more positive news stories which have come out. So, for instance, the fact that certain car manufacturers are choosing to stay in the UK regardless of the fact that we looks like that we're going to be leaving. If you can split things up into those two camps, you end up with two very different discussions and two very different arguments or solutions that need to be presented.
Yeah, I feel like the last podcast that we did on media bias on Brexit was when we talked about Tim Montgomery and him saying that the BBC was not Brexity enough and was too Remainy. So, Fred, how much do you agree with Steve's assessment? Is it that the BBC's always been criticised for being biased against whichever political faction happens to be complaining at the time, or is there something deeper, do you think?
Corey, as you and Steve know, I'm passionately against Brexit, and so anything that kind of seems to lead the media to kind of give the view that this Brexit world is going to be okay, I'm really challenged by, because I don't agree with that. I think I think that's something that is kind of selling a false prospectus, if you like, to us as a country. But I think there's a lot in what Steve said. One thing that's interesting though on that is that how few people recognise that. I think. I mean, a friend of mine was doing a training session for some professionals. I won't divulge what profession they were in, but, you know, on how to deal with the media. And, went through the newspaper titles and asked them what they thought that the newspaper titles' political views might be. And the numbers of people who didn't know, even within, you know, quite an educated group of people, was quite interesting. He told me it was really quite, we're interested in our politics. We live and breathe this stuff. But how many people don't realise, even those that read The Sun and other tabloids, and particularly those that read the Daily Mail as well. So there is a kind of, you know, which again shows the insidious nature of some of that kind of leading views. So that said, I think, you know, Lord Adonis is potentially got a challenge in the right place with the BBC. I think there's some really interesting things about what's been happening to the BBC in the last few years. I think in response to particularly John Whittingdale's time as Culture Secretary, where he really went after them, the question of how the BBC exists in a kind of world that's driven by entertainment on demand, 24-hour news. Clearly, the BBC is covering certain things and not covering other things. So, you know, one of the things recently that really struck me, and I think was, you know, made by even those outside of the Lord Adonis kind of the Brexit Broadcasting Corporation kind of view, was when the two guys from Facebook and the Cambridge Analytica were giving evidence to the Commons Committee. And the BBC was, you know, they were saying shocking thing after shocking thing about what the kind of, the Cambridge Analytica were doing and it's the links with the Leave campaign. And the BBC were not covering this at all. And when they eventually did, a good couple of hours later, it was very much, back on there, the Facebook story rather than the referendum story. I also think the way that kind of, you know, Andrew Neil and Andrew Marr and others have had people who have been looking into this on their shows and very much kind of poo-pooed them and said they're talking nonsense. And, you know, again, has been interesting. So I think there's something in it, but to respond to it by going full out, as you say, Farage-like, demonising the BBC, I think... it's dangerous for one thing because it gives credibility to all those who see bias everywhere. And I think the BBC does strive for impartiality. It does do that. What it understands impartiality to mean and how, you know, whether we have the right definition of impartiality for the current climate of polarisation within our country is an interesting kind of...
The problem is the way actually he's going about it at points, to me at least, is bordering on almost... It seems very, very similar to some of the approaches I've seen actually in online from much more fringe groups, including actually the alt-right and things like that, where it's been, you know, highlighting specific individuals like producers at the BBC and kind of questioning them, not questioning their kind of views. And we're not even talking on-air talent like Andrew Marr or Andrew Neil or whoever else, you know. But when you end up questioning just like the assistant producer of a TV show who happens to have been in charge of a specific episode, it comes across very much like bullying. And that is something which I think is going to do him and the Remain cause any good at all.
And I think there's some fair challenges in there, Steve. But one thing I think is that this is a dramatic time, and I don't think any of us really kind of recognise what's going on in our own heads as we respond to something that is going to lead our country into something that's so unknown. And I think we respond to that in all kinds of more pressured ways, you know, that we're kind of in a situation where a lot of people really, really, really deeply worry about where this country's going to go if we go on this Brexit adventure. And they're screaming, and that's how they respond on social media.
I think you're right in that a lot of people are very, very worried. And a lot of people, I mean, rightly, are worried about the practicalities of leaving. We've talked about them on the podcast, about what happens if Britain doesn't leave with a deal. The problem, I think, and this isn't quite media bias, but I think it's a problem with Remain campaign tactics generally, is still not really coming to terms with why Remain lost and how to face that practically, I think, in the future. The Brexit vote was a cultural phenomenon as much as it was an economic one. And yet a lot of the Remain commentators are still talking about the economics of it. It's still based on speeches from John Major and Tony Blair, who, lining up big experts saying how damaging it will be, rather than...
And I think that's true. And I think one of the interesting things on that, Corey, that kind of goes back to that media bias issue, is that we have had a culture war created in the UK. And I don't think we've realised that this has happened in the way that it's happened. You know, that these guys who were always on the fringe always wanted to kind of create this. And they do it all the time now. And I mean, Jacob Rees-Mogg met with Steve Bannon. There's been a kind of clear links between Leave.eu and Cambridge Analytica and Bannon. These guys genuinely are about dividing people.
And what we've done is we've gone to a culture war with a spreadsheet. The problem is how you try and change what's going on while not refighting the referendum campaign. And I think a lot of it all the way through has been trying to find an excuse to wiggle out of the result. So you've had the kind of, it's just an advisory referendum.
We've often looked at other countries that have had these kind of referendums, be that Ireland, be that, you know, around Lisbon, around Denmark, around various things. And we've looked at them, and Switzerland famously, most of all, in terms of how it kind of, you know, and Switzerland being one of the countries that we're going to start echoing quite heavily if we keep going down, you know, the more positive Brexit that we can, and softer Brexit we'll be doing, is that we sit there and look down on them for wriggling out. But actually, they're politicians that they elect to represent them in the national interest, sit there thinking, yeah, well, okay, it didn't go the way we done. We've got to somehow or other recognise that, but that doesn't mean we go on a completely, you know, route that means damages that will be done to our economy, to our country. And yeah, they have to wriggle out of it somehow or other, and they do. And we knock them, and so we're not being like them. We're not saying we're going to rerun this referendum, you know, the UK government. We're going to go ahead with this. Doesn't matter where it takes us. And that's a problem, because that means that even when you can see something's going to be bad for people, you are genuinely leading the country to the bad place. And that's really not something that a Western country has tried for a long time.
But if we try and maybe go back to the media bias aspect, like, how do you do that then? Do you just have a ticker tape on the bottom of News24 saying, by the way, Brexit is a terrible decision that will lead to our children's futures crumbling?
And this is the problem the BBC have. To deliver impartiality in a polarised world is really hard, unless you kind of do a literal yes, no, yes, no, which is what the BBC are trying to do. I mean, climate change is the other one, right? Why on earth would you have Nigel Lawson on after Al Gore to talk about, you know, the latest developments on the stuff that Gore's been doing around the Inconvenient Truth films? Why would you have Nigel Lawson? What has Nigel Lawson got to say, training or anything, on any form of science whatsoever? He's a former Tory chancellor who kind of has a very famous daughter. And you know, in that sense, and that's how he's maintained his public presence. But in order to kind of make it balanced, as the BBC have seen, they had Al Gore and Nigel Lawson. Well, why not have Al Gore? Because if you were really properly fair, you'd have Al Gore followed by 90 other scientists saying that Al Gore's right. And then you might have Nigel Lawson. You might have a programme on climate change denial that was a kind of half an hour on BBC Four at the evening saying there are still some people out there that deny climate change. Here's Nigel Lawson to tell us about his group of people on the fringes of the science community. But you wouldn't have him snap bang in the middle of the Today programme. So there's something gone wrong in the way they understand impartiality. I wonder if it's a kind of Oxford Union kind of thing. You know, the debating society. You have one guy arguing for the motion, the other guy arguing against the motion. And sometimes you have a completely ridiculous guy coming in that everybody in the audience who's educated and knows what they're talking about can sit there and ridicule the silly man. And there's no way that everybody's going to go and vote and agree with that guy. You're just giving him an opportunity to be laughed at. And I wonder if that's the thing. And I wonder if the educating of the audience, the old Reith stuff about educating and, you know, society has been lost from this. And actually, somehow or other, they've got to get that back.
As the BBC has evolved over time, its output has gone from trying to educate people in a very middle class notion of what education was, absolutely, but going from educating people to providing entertainment in a lot of ways. And, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with that in and of itself, but they have that, as a result of that, a certain ethos of an approach to journalism itself has been lost along the way. And I think it boils down to the fact that ultimately, even factual news programmes like Today on BBC Radio 4 or PM, they're still judged in a lot of ways by their ratings. Ultimately, to get good ratings, you need to have interesting people on. Now, Nigel Lawson may be wrong about climate change, absolutely, but you are going to tune in when you hear he's on, for the most part, or a lot of people will, because he's going to say something interesting and because he's coming out with the other side of a debate, which often isn't heard a lot of the time.
But there's a responsibility issue there, isn't there? Someone was, you know, sharing, you know, kind of Oswald Mosley's view on the press and all that recently, which was really interesting, kind of, you know, echoing of how in a fascist state the press wouldn't be free for the very fact that they lie to the people all the time, you know. And I guess, you know, there are countries, you know, on Earth at the moment who are very, very good at shutting down their press. There is a fine line that those that would accuse the BBC of bias, you know, are treading, and they've got to be very careful not to just give the excuse that actually the BBC is biased, you know, for this reason, so that you know, it used to be the old thing, well, BBC bias, you know, they say we're biased on the left, the right say we're biased to the, you know, the other way. And that kind of proves a point. This Brexit discussion for the BBC is and the climate change discussion is really hard because they clearly are giving people on climate change for a voice where they wouldn't get it anywhere else. And they, and certainly as a summation of the debate, these are fringe voices and they're being put prime time. In terms of Brexit, you know, they do get caught in that because, you know, a deep understanding of Brexit from a public service broadcaster would want to confront the difficult issues.
So there's YouGov polling which suggests that 45% of Leave voters actively think the BBC is anti-Brexit. And so do you think, and I'm guessing a lot of the Nigel Farage shtick and the tabloid media shtick is that the BBC is these kind of metropolitan lefty liberals. Has that got anything to do with it, do you think?
I think part of the reason you end up with people on both sides viewing the BBC as being, you know, anti their side is because, you know, the BBC's definition of impartiality, as we've discussed, is finding the opposite opinion and putting that forward at the same time as the original opinion. What that means is there's always going to be somebody on the BBC at some point that's going to annoy you because they're wrong. They're just wrong. If you believe in climate change, Nigel Lawson's going to be that. If you're an avid Brexiteer, Andrew Adonis is going to be on there, or, you know,
or Patrick Minford.
Or the equivalents. Which means when you're looking at it, what stands out to you is always, and this is just a natural thing as a person, you remember the times you get angry much more than the times you went, yeah, no, I'll agree with that.
And I do think there's something else here, which is around the mass of communication that people are bombarded with every day, and how do you find trustworthy voices within everything that's thrown at you, particularly if you're really time poor. In a way that we are in modern society.
This is why the BBC needs to change one of its founding tenets. It was always founded with the notion of being an impartial organisation. Now, when we exist in a world where, you know, polarisation on both sides leads to almost magical realism and fantasism in both the left and right, impartiality doesn't actually deliver anything meaningful. What it needs to be is, its main tenet needs to be providing fact and
evidence based. It has to be
actually evidence based things, which would drastically actually alter the way it would need to be structured. Because at the moment, its journalism consists primarily of it's not quite press release journalism in the way that a lot of, say, the Daily Mail stuff is, but it is still very much of that old school nature, and it's lacking in a lot of that what I would consider traditional journalistic vigour in the form of, you know, investigative journalism and people who are actually applying critical thought. Everything is much more about this is what was said, this is what someone has said, this is what the response was, rather than actual analysis and critical reasoning of events.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's missing.
And I think what might happen if you've got the rise of more kind of activist journalists, so you've got the rise of things like Navarro Media, you've got the rise of things like the Canary, like Squawk Box, like Breitbart. And I think if we're not careful, what kind of happens is, I think they seem to make hay with attacking the BBC, I'm guessing, because it makes them look like the people who are saying...
Yeah, indeed, their aim must be to convince people that they are the truth. So that they can draw people to that.
And they've got, I think, a proper agenda out there. I don't think really what we try and say is journalism yet. I think we're proper out and out saying we're commentators. We're not trying to be journalists. We're not trying to, I think, be comprehensive in the way that the BBC coverage you talk about will be comprehensive. I almost think that's kind of the point of the BBC, is it's going to have to provide breadth as well as depth in a way that other news outlets aren't able to.
And I think that's the other... We desperately need an effective BBC in a post-Brexit or post-referendum world. But we are going to need a BBC that can help us deal with that, because otherwise this polarisation is going to grow and we're going to see some real difficult societal effects in my view. So I think you're right. I think with the growth of online kind of news sources that are potentially not as impartial, it does show that the press world is becoming, is that kind of, the American problem of Fox News and on one side and MSNBC on the other, you know, is going to become much more the thing. And as people go to more of those things, less people go to the BBC. The BBC will either go more towards them or will find that its place is kind of, its space is not there.
And I think what's striking actually when you look at, I mentioned the YouGov polling earlier, and you look at the attitudes of most people to a wide range of publications, and the thing that strikes you, apart from the fact you think, who are the 6% of people who think the Daily Mail is anti-Brexit, is that actually anywhere between 40% and 70% of people, their opinion is don't know. And that I don't think have engaged with the media enough to form a view. So I think that goes back to your point earlier that a lot of people probably aren't engaging with this stuff and probably do get their news more from aggregated sites, internet service providers or Twitter rather than...
Or as Paul Simon sang, the weather report. Yeah. Or the news I need. Sorry. Great song.
Have we got anything else to say? Right, we'll be back with more biased, impartial takes about how we are right and everyone else in the media is wrong next week. Our theme tune is Plucky Good Times by Dave Depper, and James Cram designed our logo. We will hopefully have stuff that is local election related on our website, notenoughchampagne.com, and our Facebook page, facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. My Twitter handle is PaperMattRioter.
Mine's @CentreRadical.
@FredGrinrod.
Happy plotting, everyone.